Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
The 2014 Sundance Film Festival will be taking place from January 16th through January 26th in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and at the Sundance Resort. Individual tickets are now available to Utah locals. Visit sundance.org/festival/locals.
Hello?
Yes, sir. This is your conscience.
Oh, Jiminy!
My name's not Jiminy, I'm Alex. I'm just your conscience. Jiminy was really boring. They had me replace him. He was kind of a prude and kind of got caught looking at kiddie porn.
What?
I'm Dan Nalen, and once again, you have found the Soundwaves from the Underground podcast, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk to Bill Allred, the host of the Let's Go Eat Show podcast and one of the Radio from Hell team from X96. We also talk with Brock Butterfield, snowboarder extraordinaire, and we also have the founder of the Urban Arts Dance and Fitness Studio. We are extremely happy to have Bill and Dylan Allred in the Soundwave studio here. Bill Allred, you might know from X96 Radio from Hell team, and Dylan and he together make the Let's Go Eat podcast. Lest you have the wrong idea, I've listened to many of these. It's not all about food. It's an all-over-the-map kind of podcast. But first of all, welcome and thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Why don't we just start right at the beginning in terms of sort of the impetus for doing a podcast? Obviously, you have different constraints on your time. You both do other things besides the podcast in your world. Tell me a little where it came from.
I don't know. Why do we do a podcast? I guess my theory or my thought about it was it's kind of an extension in a way of Radio from Hell on X96. If people who listen to the Radio from Hell show, if they like the Radio from Hell show and they like Bill on the Radio from Hell show, maybe they want a little more Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go to the Let's Go Eat show and get a little more Bill.
Okay. Is that what you were going for, Dylan? A little more Bill?
No, that's not... No. I thought you wanted to do it just to compete with Kerry Jackson's podcast.
Does he do one?
Thought he was showing you up.
I'm not sure.
I didn't know that he did one. He might have a little podcast. I kind of pushed you to start it because I'm in college at Weber State and I'm studying the media and broadcasting and stuff, and I thought this is a great way to learn about doing this kind of work on a regular basis.
A little production,
for no money.
Well, even the business you're in probably isn't like... Well, college student, obviously, you're paying for that.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's, I'm having my doubts about podcasts now. After 2 years of doing them, I'm having my doubts about them because I start looking at podcasts and everybody does it.
It's almost like you're on Facebook. You have a podcast now? Or
yeah, I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but I start looking at just local podcasts, and there are people who do podcasts here, and they interview lots of people.
Right.
And they have lots of followers, apparently. Lots of...
However you measure these things.
Yeah. and I don't know, and by lots of followers, I don't know if that means people actually listen to the podcast, but there are apparently lots of people who indicate that they know that it's there.
They're conscious of it.
Yeah.
Right.
So I start looking at that, and then I start clicking on those people who say that they follow it. And those people who say that they follow it, they also do podcasts.
Right.
Many of them also do podcasts.
Sort of like how bloggers follow each other and list each other in their blog rule kind of style.
Yeah. So I started clicking on them, and I said, they do podcasts. And so I started listening to, I thought, well, I'll listen to some of those podcasts and see what they're like. And they're terrible.
Right.
You know, it's two or three guys sitting in a basement, you know, and they say, we do an irreverent podcast where no subject is off limits.
And then it's, three guys yakking about whatever politics or sports or something like that.
You know, so I'm just wondering, why should I do a podcast? Everybody does it. Why should I bother?
Tell you why I think you should, because I am a fan of of the radio show and of the podcast. And to me, when I was listening to several episodes today, sort of in one stint, I was comparing it in my addled little mind to sort of like reading the Playboy interview, where a long, extended conversation with someone, and you don't get those everywhere and or very many places at all. Mm-hmm. And so listening to you have an hour-long chat with somebody is far more valuable to me than so many other outlets where you might get someone for 2 minutes on a TV news show or something like that.
That's kind of what I had in mind, is you can have a long-form conversation with somebody. And I don't know, maybe there aren't those anymore because people don't want them anymore. Maybe they want three numbskulls in a basement, you know, drinking beer, and the wife comes down and yells down the stairwell, "Are you guys going to keep doing that down there?" You
know, right.
Maybe that's
I got to do the laundry now.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I think about it. I mean, about how everybody does it. To me, it's kind of like rock and roll bands and garage bands.
It's a good analogy.
There's, you know, if you do a podcast, first off, and you do it well, and you do it for a long enough time, there's a difference between that kind of a podcast, and then there are the three high school buddies in their basement drinking beer. It's a difference between a garage band and a professional rock and roll band.
It's, you know, and it's hard. I listen to some podcasts that are... to a little bit of a podcast today when I was at the gym, sitting on an exercise bike for 40 minutes. I had Penn Jillette in my ears.
Yeah.
And that's all I had. And it wasn't even his whole podcast.
Right. It was his.
Yeah. He's going an hour and 20 minutes or something.
It's half of it.
That's right. All I had time
that's
for.
That's it. I had friends always trying to turn me on to Mark Maron's podcast, and he'll go 2 hours sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, who has time to sit in 2 hours? I mean, you can do it in pieces, but I don't live in a commuter city. I don't have to get on a train for an hour and a half.
There's more to this than when
you,
we were
you
have
naturally
figured
curious
out.
About sort of, because obviously kind of podcast blew up out of, not out of nowhere, but. Were you kind of naturally curious as just sort of a natural extension to what you were doing with radio, and you're a performer, you know, stage-wise, you know, in the past? And
I'm not, because I'm curious about it, but I don't have the ability to do it. I need somebody to do it for me. I need to be the guy that just sits there and performs.
Does you host.
And then I need a guy, I need a producer. I need a 25-year-old producer, you know, to say, here's what we do. Here's how we make this work, and here's how we... You know, he has to constantly remind me it isn't a radio show, and I don't have to reset all the time.
Right.
You know,
we can fix this in post.
That was the one direction I got before we started this was, okay, now we'll do this. You have to do all the work.
Do you schedule the guests and the restaurants,
and
or where does that
out,
all come together?
Kind of, for the most part, you schedule the guests.
I do. Yeah.
And then half the time I set up the restaurants, half the time you set up the restaurants.
Just depends. You know, we usually try to let the guests select the restaurant, but finally the salespeople at the radio station are starting to go, oh.
There might be something to be done with this, huh?
You know, they've stopped asking now, what time is your podcast on?
I love that. Yeah,
you know, they've kind of stopped doing. They're starting to get the idea. They're a little more Neanderthal about it than I am. You know, they've stopped saying now. What time is that on?
What's been sort of the biggest challenge, if there is one, over the last couple of years? Has it been people being skeptical about being a guest on a podcast? Has it been just the sheer? I mean, it's more work than people realize, I'd imagine, especially the production side.
Yeah, I mean, there's always some technical issues. I think part of the good thing about him being my dad is I can say, no, you're going to invest the money now in having a website that will function the way you want it to, and having all the server space you're going to want, so you don't have to change it later.
But it's not much. It's not very expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been spending my own money on it, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because it's benefiting the radio station, and we won't go into all of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's essentially just for the website, and it's $100 a month, and that's not bad,
for
you know.
Everything you need.
I bought the equipment from some guy who I don't even remember his name now, who said,
"Yeah, I have some equipment for my podcast I did in my basement."
Well,
he heard
me talking about it on the radio and said, "I've been doing a podcast in my basement, and I want to get better equipment." I'll sell you all this old equipment for $300.
Hey.
Okay.
Have we ever had a guest I mean, just not want to come on? Have you ever asked somebody to come on and they said, no, I don't do that?
No.
They have trickier guests than others, probably. Or
yes.
Maybe people who just aren't that used to opening up in a long, extended conversation, maybe.
Yeah, but they're, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty good at getting people to talk.
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody that's been...
I mean, there have been people on the show who I think have not really been very comfortable talking about themselves.
Right.
But then
Doug
usually...
Fabrizio.
Chris Van Oker was like that, right? Yeah.
Chris
people
Van
are
Oker.
Used to being on the other side of the microphone
they,
in particular.
Right. They don't like to.
But then you've changed the conversation to something else interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was really interesting to hear you and Doug Fabrizio to discuss interviewing and your techniques and how you do that and how you guys are very opposite of how you approach an interview. And, you know, so I think some of those episodes where it's kind of been turned upside down because somebody's been, quote unquote, difficult have
been.
Well,
Doug doesn't want to talk a lot about himself personally.
Yeah.
And Chris doesn't want to talk about himself personally too much. And so... You know, and I mean, they'll tell you that going in. But most people, they want to.
Well, don't you find it's been my belief over the years that when you get kind of kicked off kilter of the direction you think you might be talking about, say you're interviewing somebody about their new record or their new movie, and when you get off on a sidetrack, is usually when all the good shit is coming, right? Like they're out of their comfort zone or out of their auto mode, and it makes you think of different things on the fly too.
Yeah, you know what people are really really interested in is that they can swear.
Yeah. I wrote that down. Like, was this just an excuse to swear on the air?
No, they're really interested in that, and
if it's air.
And they kind of play. They'll say, "Really?" You know, very occasionally we'll say, "Fuck," or you know, just very occasionally.
Yeah.
I feel a little uncomfortable to saying that, as a matter of fact.
Right.
But, you know, we say shit or...
When you're a pro who's been behind a mic on the FCC airwaves for a long time.
they'll go, you know, God damn. No, it's okay. You can say that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. You know, people like that.
And a lot of listeners, especially at the beginning, commented about, it is so weird to hear Bill Allred say fuck on my radio. That is so cool.
Coming through my computer. Oh, yeah. And talk about food, so.
And then you eat.
And then you eat a good meal, have a couple drinks, you know.
Well, that's what I said. What are you good at? And you said, I'm good at talking and I'm good at eating. I said, well, that's our show.
Right, yeah, I'd make it a double every time.
And drinking.
Good at drinking.
So, yeah.
That's right.
Dylan, you had mentioned before we started recording this bad boy that you guys are going to do a little Ogden episode with Joe McQueen, who's a legendary jazz player up there. Anything else out there sort of in the ether in the future that you could feel comfortable letting people know they could listen to?
Excellent. We're going to be talking to a local actor, showbiz guy.
I have a list of people my goal is to get on the show, and it's just a dream list that I've made very little stride in getting these people on.
To date.
It's my goal before, you know, like we're done with the podcast or one of us croaks or whatever happens first to get, you know, like I'd love to get like John Huntsman on our podcast or...
buy him a meal at the right Szechuan restaurant. I think you're in.
Szechuan is his thing?
Yeah.
Talk
to Mary Maloof from Salt Lake Magazine. She got him to go out to dinner once, and we had a story out of it just like that.
All right.
John brought Mary Kay, told everyone what to order, because the man knows his food.
Very good.
And I know he's listened to our show, so.
And he really likes Rush.
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to get Richard Paul Evans on, and I think I can do that. That's not a big deal. I think we can do that.
We've talked about since the beginning. Ty Burrell.
Oh yeah,
lives has a home in Park City, and his family's all from around here.
Yeah. Hey, he's opening a new beer bar, half of Bar X. That might be a good excuse to get into his ear a little bit.
I'd really love to talk to John or to the governor.
Gary Herbert.
I'd like to have Gary Herbert on the show. Right, I don't think he'll do it, but I'd like to have
him. When he's out of office, just buying your time.
You know, people like that.
Yeah, or like Orrin Hatch.
Mm-hmm. No,
when he's out of office,
right?
Maybe.
Well, you guys seem to be on about a weekly pace. I mean, you guys take regular breaks. Is that sort of the goal? Is a
well, we try
them
to.
Out, or are you doing in bursts?
No, we try to do. We record about every 2 weeks.
Okay,
and try to get enough. You know, so we do two.
Yeah,
every
stash
two weeks.
Them up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we don't really, we've taken a few breaks over the 2 years, but they're usually coincide. Like recently we took one because he had his knee replaced.
Right.
You know, sometimes like over the holidays, or we both went on a week-long river trip. No, who's going to do the podcast? We're both on a
pack
raft.
Pack the gear. Yeah, we're get a dry bag. Bring the gear.
Be a few weeks. But we try to do a new show. Every Monday.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in, both of you. I really appreciate it. Everybody out there, you can find it at theletsgoeatshow.com.
Right.
And, of course, iTunes, Stitcher, your assorted other outlets where people find such things.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan and Bill, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Problem Daughter is a four-piece punk rock band based right here in SLC. They released their debut album, American Heroine, back in January of 2009, a virtual lifetime ago, and they followed it up immediately with their sophomore album called With Open Hearts and Empty Hands back in February of 2010. Took a bit of a hiatus after that, but they returned in 2012 with a self-titled full-length album. This is a song called Low Ceilings off of Problem Daughter. Daughter will be headlining Localized this Friday, November 8th, along with Jaws and Foster Body at Urban Lounge. The show starts at 9 p.m. and it is a mere $5 cover charge. For more information on the band, visit them online at problemdaughter.com. Brock Butterfield is a professional snowboarder living right here in Salt Lake City. He originally started out in the hills of Idaho before getting into snowboarding professionally way back in 2004. He moved to Salt Lake City a year later and found crews to roll with in Brighton, the Canyons, Park City, and other places. Since he started competing, he's qualified and placed in several events since around 2007 and become part of the Tyrant Snowboard Team. Slug writer Jamie Scott sat down with Butterfield to talk about his career.
what was the catalyst or the event that really pushed you into pursuing snowboarding?
It started when I was younger. I used to actually ski when I started out as a kid. I think I was on skis when I was 3. Got into the snowblades when I got into junior high because I thought they were cool. And I was like, oh, sweet, new thing, snowblades. I was racing my friend down a mountain and wrecked on him and tore my ACL. So that kind of put me out for the season. And then I got into skateboarding a lot the summer after. And kind of got out of winter stuff because I didn't have any good clothes. I was cold, and I was like, oh, I don't really want to go anymore. My friend's like, you should try the snowboarding thing. So I was like, okay, well, I can't skate in the winter, so I'll go try it. And that just kind of catapulted into me picking up really fast and then loving it. And I was like, oh, this is way better falling on snow than concrete. It's a lot softer. So that's kind of what got me into it.
Did you take any lessons, or were you just a natural at it?
No, that's the funny thing is I didn't take any lessons, and I went up with the school one day. They had like a program where you could go skiing and snowboarding, and I signed up for, I had to go in a class in the beginning, and so I put myself in the expert class because I felt like I was an expert at snowboarding, and it worked. Like, I was able to keep up with everybody, and then at the end of the day, I told my instructor, I was like, this is my first time ever snowboarding, and he was blown away. He's like, really?
Who or what are your sources of inspiration in snowboarding?
This one's a crazy one. When I was probably 20, I got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is kind of like Crohn's disease, but not as bad. My case actually became so bad that they had to cut out my whole large intestine and colon.
Ouch.
So yeah, so that's missing. I got a big zipper from the belly button down. At that time when that happened, I was working a lot of IT jobs, computer support, and hating life. I was just like over being in front of a computer. I wanted to be outside all the time. So that was kind of my source of inspiration to take a chance on life and just do what I wanted to do, rather than what society kind of expects you to do, a 9-to-5 job. So cashed in my 401k that I had and just lived off of that for as long as I could and just snowboarded.
That's so neat. I feel like a lot of people secretly have dreams like that and they never cash in on them. And as unfortunate as what happened to you was, I think it's awesome that it was able to like push you into wanting to pursue something that you're really passionate about.
Yeah, and I mean, I lucked out because I didn't have like kids that I had to watch out for, or like huge debt or anything that I couldn't just walk away from. So I was fortunate in that sense to just be able to take a break for a while and kind of check out life again.
Did you have a mentor or anybody to kind of guide you through entering into the snowboarding world?
Nobody that was necessarily in the industry. It's my old scout leader that got me into like really enjoying snowboarding when I was younger. I linked back in with him years later, and he started taking me out in the backcountry on snowmobiles. Okay. And I told him, I'm like, I want to make a go for this, and I want to try to get sponsored in snowboarding. He's like, yeah, you should. He's like, here, I'll help you. I'll take photos, I'll film, we'll make a demo tape, we'll do whatever you can and get it going. So he was kind of my help and my mentor in a sense.
What would you consider your first big break into the industry?
When I joined Never Summer Snowboards out of Denver, Colorado, that was probably the biggest one, because before then I had just kind of smaller sponsors that weren't really well known or local. For example, I rode for some local Salt Lake City companies. And then when I picked up Never Summer, that was like the big break, because then I was kind of recognized as a valuable, good snowboarder, and they wanted to give me as much, you know, help as I needed to catapult into the industry even more.
You've had video parts in Never Summer's Days of Trunder and Slap Happy, as well as Candy Grind's What's Good. How does it feel to be featured in a professional film?
It's still like every time I watch the video online, I'm still kind of like really just blown away. I'm like, that's, man, I can't believe I'm in this video. But last winter was like really, really big because we spent a lot of time filming, and really just every day we were out filming, and it was a lot of time and money on our individual parts put into it. We didn't really have like a lot of funding from sponsors. We just kind of dedicated our own time and money into it. So to see the aftermath of it and the work is really cool right now, because it's, the videos are being released and it's almost the beginning of this next season coming up. So it's like, I'm really excited for this year, and like, I just, like, I'm obsessed with filming now. I just, like, I can't wait.
That's so cool. It's got to be, like, really surreal to think of where you are now versus, you know, where you were before all this happened, like, two different lives.
Absolutely. I mean, before, when I would film, it would be me, a tripod, and a camera, and I would hike up the mountain, hit record on the camera, ride down, hike back up, turn it off. It was like, I still remember days at Brighton where people would come hiking through and I'm in the middle of the woods by myself filming and they're just like, are you here by yourself? And I'm like, yeah, well, what if you fall? Oh, got my cell phone, I guess.
The things we do.
I know.
In your opinion, what's your best trick that's been captured on camera?
I know that's a good one because I've been asked this question before and I can never really pin it down. And I think a lot of it's because I have a bigger background and love for big mountain riding as opposed to like park or urban. Mm-hmm. I still really love park and urban because there's a certain creativity level to it. And especially where snowboarding's going now, it's getting way more creative.
Definitely.
So trick, I wouldn't say that I have a trick that I'm like really proud of. I would just say riding big Alaska lines last year in the spring and like accomplishing some just huge lines there. It's probably my sense of like the best quote trick.
Oh, I would agree with you. When I was looking at your blog online, the photos of the terrain were amazing. Like to be able to have been there and to ridden some of that, it must have been awesome.
It is. It's an amazing place.
You've put a lot of effort into your website and in social media, essentially creating the Brock Butterfield brand. Compared to some of the other riders that are in the industry, this is leaps and bounds ahead of what they're doing. Can you explain to our listeners what motivated you to kind of take this initial step forward and start branding yourself?
Yeah, that started because when I first decided I was going to start sending a demo tape out and photos to sponsors and try to get sponsored, the first one was DC. I knew a friend of a friend that worked there, so I sent my stuff over and he was basically like, we're only looking for 17-year-old kids that are going into the X Games. You're too old. And at that point, I was like 20, 21. I was like, man, that really sucks. After that, as I kept pushing to get sponsored, I realized that I was a subpar rider. And I still think of myself as a subpar rider. But I'm really good with realizing the business aspect of it. I run three businesses of my own, so I understand why it's important to market yourself in the right way and why brands would want to invest in you. So when the economy took a dump, and I watched a lot of my friends and a lot of riders get dumped from teams and let go, I realized one thing that people weren't doing at that time was taking advantage of social media, Facebook, Twitter, you know, and then Instagram came after that, and promoting not only yourself, but a brand. And Mark Frank Montoya is a professional snowboarder. He's been around for a long time, and he did that with himself, but not in the social media aspect, as far as I could tell. So I'm like, well, I'm a subpar rider, but I'm really good at marketing brands that I would ride for, so that's kind of the approach I'm gonna take. So that's where the website idea came from, and then just pushing it from there.
That's very cool.
Thanks.
The amount of effort that you've put into it is really awesome, and it shows through everything that you're putting forward, and you're constantly updating it, so it's not just like you created this infrastructure, you're actually actively using it, which is gotta be nice for a lot of people who are following you as well as companies that are interested.
Yeah, and I try to keep it updated as much as possible, but sometimes as you get so busy with other stuff, just life in general, that I'm like, oh, I haven't blogged for like 2 months. I better like do something. But at least Instagram is a really good one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can feed that right into the website and people can still keep an eye on what you're doing and follow you that way.
All I can think of when I hear you talk about the website is that quote from The Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed any benefits in sponsorships or increased opportunities because of your efforts online?
Yes, definitely. I mean, when I would approach new brands at new companies at SIA, which is in Denver, I found that I'd made a lot more headway with new companies when I could kind of show them like how many hits my website gets, and then, you know, how many people I have following me on Instagram and Twitter and like my Facebook athlete page and stuff like that. They really saw the benefit in that because in their mind they turned it into a marketing thing and said, well, if this kid is wearing our product or on our stuff, you know, that's that many more people that are going to see it and potentially go buy our stuff. So it definitely has helped.
So you're out there and you're looking for sponsors. What's your white whale or the thing that you're after and it's your dream as far as sponsorship goes?
See, I thought about this one for a while and I've had a few questions like this, like what's the ultimate sponsor that you could have, you know? And there's a lot of big names that come to mind that I'm like, oh, it'd be great to ride for that company or this company. But when it all boils down to it, for me, I think if I could just get myself in a situation where my own ideas take off, to where I'm running my own company and I can kind of like sponsor myself and be able to ride whenever I want, wherever I want, with whoever I want, and not have to worry about a pressure of, okay, I have a contract with this big company, so I have to produce and I have to make sure I do this. So if I could have the white whale, it would be just basically myself and like being able to provide for myself and snowboard whenever I wanted.
That's the dream.
That's the dream, yeah.
I like it. Your website also contains a how-to section, how to get sponsored in snowboarding, how to create a snowboarding resume, etc. I think it's really cool that you're spreading your knowledge on the process of becoming pro. Have you gotten any feedback from riders who you've helped?
I have, and it's funny, it's usually like young boys that are like trying to get into snowboarding and just want to be sponsored. I get people that are writing like reports in either high school or college on like professional athletes, and they come across my page. So I get a lot of questions that way, and then it's fun, like when the younger kids write to me and they're like, I just want to be sponsored, like can you like tell me what to do, or can you watch my YouTube video and tell me like what you think. I try to never sugarcoat anything, but I also try to take into consideration these kids are, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, so they may not be really good now, but they're probably going to be good later. So I just try to be like, yes, you're doing an awesome job, but maybe think about this, or keep your arms a little calmer, or look out for that gaper gap between your helmet and your goggles.
That's awesome that you can be that person for the next generation. I think it's really neat.
I never had it, so that's why I was like, I'm gonna make an effort to help people like get sponsored, like, or at least know the steps you should take to try to get sponsored, because there was no how-to when I started.
The 2013-2014 snow season's coming up. What is on your agenda for this year? Do you have new films, new tricks you're working on, competitions, goals?
That's a good one. So no competitions. I've kind of taken a step away from that the past couple years. I used to do the North Face Master Tours, big mountain competitions. And they were fun in the beginning, but then they just started to get a little too political in my sense. And I saw a lot of big name sponsors come in and take over the events. So there was a lot of money being poured into it, and you started watching the judging kind of go a different way. And so I stepped away from that, which is probably the best thing I could have done, because I put the money towards filming and traveling and stuff like that. So this year, the goal is to get to Alaska again. That's always going to be the main goal of the winter, because that place is amazing. And then film with Candy Grind and Never Summer Again, as well as I'm kind of in the works with a few web edit projects that I have on the radar right now.
Ooh, it sounds like you're going to have a busy winter.
It usually always is really busy, yeah.
So you've kind of hinted a couple times throughout this. Is snowboarding your main job right now, or do you put time in somewhere else?
I don't make anything snowboarding. I absolutely make no money there. In fact, I probably spend more money in it than I should, but it's a hobby and a passion. I started a handful of different companies. I'm kind of an entrepreneur, I guess you could say, but the first one that brings in the majority of money for me is IT consulting. So I have a degree in computer science. So I'm like the nerd behind the computer, fixing servers and computers. Handful of clients that I do work for. Actually, one of the clients, I just had a two-page spread in Snowboard Mag of me in Alaska. Thank you. I had no idea about it. I didn't even know it ran. I didn't know the photo ran. And I'm working at a client's office, and the accounting lady, she's like, hey, we saw your photo in the magazine. I was like, photo? So I guess the shop kid had a copy of the magazine and brought it up, and they showed me. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. And I was like, wow. And they're like, will you sign it? And I was just like, yeah, of course. Like, this is really crazy. They just like had no idea their IT guy was a professional snowboarder on the side. So that's one of the companies I run and do on my own. And then I started a company with my girlfriend called findfestivaljobs.com, which is a cool website to help people that like to work festivals find different festival jobs around the world. So that keeps me pretty occupied, and that those two are the combination of what kind of fuels my funding for snowboarding and the rest of the year.
My next question was going to be, do you find it difficult to juggle your snowboarding career with, you know, your personal career? But it sounds like you've kind of created the ideal situation for yourself.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet, because a lot of the IT work I can do, and running Fine Festival Jobs can all be done remotely. there's only a few cases where a piece of hardware fails at a client's office and I have to go in and physically work with the server or the computer. So in that case, when I take off and go to Alaska for a month, I have a good couple of friends that usually cover for me, and I pay them to make sure that my clients are happy and taken care of if anything goes wrong. So, yeah.
Well, cool. You just set it up to win. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been a long, like, 3-4 years of hard work to do it, but it's finally starting to pay off, so it's nice.
Cool. We all know that Utah has the greatest snow on earth. I mean, it's on our license plates. Let's see, we have so many resorts. Where is your favorite place to ride and why?
So are we talking resort-wise, or are we talking just anywhere in the world?
I'm talking resorts in Utah. Like, if people here just fall madly snowboarder crush on you right now and want the Brock Butterfield experience,
I'm gonna be.
Yeah.
That's hard because I love a lot of the resorts around here, and that's the thing I love about Utah the most. In Salt Lake is, and we're 30 minutes away from like 9 different world-class resorts. So last year I spent time at Snow Basin, and years before that it's been Snowbird and Brighton and Canyons. So this year I will have a pass to the Canyons. I couldn't pass up that epic pass with how much traveling I do to Colorado and California. It's like, well, now I can go ride there for free as well. So we'll have a pass there. I'll spend the good days at the Bird. Although what day isn't a good day at the Bird, I guess.
Right?
I'll be at Brighton as well, but I think the majority of my time's gonna be out in the backcountry. I'm gonna try to make a more of a conscious effort to get out on the split board and try to do more of that this year, so.
I like it, you're spreading your love around.
Yes, yes, all over.
Can you describe for me your ideal snow day?
Call me crazy, but I love it when it's storming and just bombing snow and it's like really harsh conditions. You've got your face mask on and nobody's there at the resort. You go take a run, you come back to the lift and you get back on and the same track that you went down before is buried in snow. I'm sure sunny days are awesome in the spring where you can drink beer and wear a t-shirt, but the whole idea of having the mountain to yourself when it's just a whiteout pow day is like my ideal situation.
Definitely, you can bond with the mountain.
Yes.
For more information on Butterfield, visit him online at brockbutterfield.com. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting on November 5th and running through November 11th. As always, I encourage you to go to slugmag.com. Check out those listings every day. There's always great stuff being added, and there is so much good stuff happening around town and up and down the Wasatch Front. It's quite amazing. I found some goodies this week. I start off on Wednesday, November 6th. Couple of really solid shows. Cold War Kids, Indie Rockers, really good live band. They're playing at the Depot. I've seen them a few times, never at such a big venue myself, so I'll be curious to see how they are at the Depot. Over out at the Saltaire the same night, Iron and Wine is back, supporting their fifth studio album, Ghost on Ghost. It was released earlier this spring. Always a good time. Sam Beam is quite a talented character himself. On Thursday, November 7th, one of my so-called guilty pleasures, Rob Zombie, back again. Pretty regular visitor, this Rob Zombie. The bummer with this is that Korn is also on the bill, but I might make my way out there to see Rob Zombie anyway. That's at the Maverick Center on Thursday, November 7th. That same night, though, you might want to stay downtown. The Spy Hop Pitchnick premiere night is happening at the Rose Wagner. That's when the Spy Hop kids put together their premiere films and show them to the public for the first time. It's always really cool to see what these kids have done in that after-school program. Truly one of the coolest things in our community. On Friday, November 8th, Slug Localized is happening at Urban Lounge. Problem Daughter, Jaws, and Foster Body are on that bill. And over across the way, Cave Doll makes their triumphant 15th or 16th different lineup return to the woodshed. Always a good time. Always cool to see what those guys are up to. Saturday, November 9th, all the metalheads in town will want to head over to Overkill and Creator playing over at In the Venue. And then on Monday, November 11th, a band that I have seriously seen in some of the most bizarre venues around, Faster Pussycat. I have no idea how many original Faster Pussycats are around. I know Tamey Down, the lead singer, is involved. I've seen them open for the Crew at the Old Salt Palace. I've seen them play Dumpy Little Dives. They're playing at the Royal, which I haven't been to yet. That's the venue owned by Royal Bliss. Should be interesting on a Monday night in Salt Lake City. As always, once again, go to slugmag.com every damn day of the week. You can add your own events there, and that is free. For a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality links to your content, and we encourage you to check it out all the damn time.
Jaws is a three-piece rock band from Salt Lake City that originally formed in 2012, and it's made up of Madison Donnelly, Chris Copeland, and Chaz Costello. They released their debut album called Chums back in September of 2012 and went on a little West Coast tour. Now they're back with a recently released 7-inch follow-up EP called Party Problems. This is a song called Smooth Operator. Jaws will be playing Localize this Friday, November 8th, along with Problem Daughter and Foster Body at Urban Lounge. The show starts at 9 p.m. and it is just $5. For more information on the band, search for Jaws, that's J-A-W-W-Z-Z, on Facebook. The Urban Art Studio and Boutique is a relatively new business in town. It opened up in early 2013. It's a dance and fitness studio, and they also host a space where people can train and teach classes in things like belly dance, Zumba, hula dancing, yoga, Pilates, you name it. Slug senior writer Mariah Mellis sat down with founder Sharavar to talk about the studio.
So tell me a little bit about the Urban Art Studio and how you got started and where you're located.
We are a dance and fitness studio. We opened earlier this year, and we're downtown between State and Main, right behind Piper Down. Love that place.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. So you can have bingo night and then come over for a belly dance class. Hey, it's perfect.
Yeah, that's great. So the exact address is 25 East, not to be confused with 25th East, it's 25 yeah. East, Kensington Avenue, which you mentioned was between State and Main. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to Google it there. And then you're a dance studio and a boutique. Let's talk a little bit about what motivated you to start the studio. And are you an artist or a dancer or a little bit of both?
I'm a belly dancer. My name is Sharavar, and that's Persian for September. And I've been dancing about 21 years now. Gosh, time flies when you're having fun.
She was two. She was 2 years old when she started dancing. Yes.
I've had a home studio for several years and taught at outside studios, but a lot of times they're not welcoming to non-traditional dance forms, and so they won't rent to
particularly belly dancing.
Yeah,
is that the non-traditional
if you're not doing ballet or something, a classical form that's recognized by federal agencies and given funding, it can be hard to find a studio at a reasonable rate that's not scary. And so I wanted to make something that was accessible to everyone.
Nice.
You know, all different types of dance, age levels, people who aren't professionals who just want to learn to dance and also take fitness classes somewhere where they feel safe and welcome, no matter what their body type, age, or financial background.
Nice. Yeah, because they seem like they're pretty affordable classes.
Yes, we try to keep it, you know, you don't have to buy a membership or anything like that. You can drop in and just check it out. Find teachers you love there. Some fabulous teachers. So.
And where do you find your teachers? How do?
We look through a lot of friends. Sometimes we go out headhunting and find fabulous teachers. We know a few, and we have great teachers. We have Ram Nam Singh is teaching Kundalini Yoga, and he works, doesn't work, but he helps to run the Sri Sri Radha Krishna Temple. And we do a temple share program where they bring us clothes and we split the profit with them, so they get a donation back on that. So you can come buy some stuff at the boutique and you're making a donation.
Oh, nice. I love getting a little something and the feel good and, you know,
Little so
health,
nice
healthy
for
your mind and your soul.
We also have a yoga class with Debbie Dilly, and that's she has Everybody Yoga, and it's welcome to every body type, no matter. It's really nice because sometimes just very slender and, you know, petite ladies and not even men feel, you know, a little not welcome in some classes, and here they're absolutely welcome.
You're saying that petite people sometimes feel unwelcome in belly dancing classes? I didn't
know.
In a
yoga class.
Or in a yoga class?
Yeah, or, you know, larger ladies or older people or sometimes men feel a little uncomfortable now and then, and she makes them feel like they are a part of it, you know.
Everybody Yoga. Okay.
So it's amazing.
Awesome.
That's one of our most popular classes, so.
Nice. So it sounds like you've got a wide variety of classes. Do they happen all the time? Or?
Yep. We have a schedule posted at saltcitystudio.com, and then you can check out Zumba, hula class, belly dance from four different teachers, five if you count the big and little bellies.
What's the big and little bellies?
It could be a mom and a daughter, a father and a daughter. It could be two sisters, you know.
Oh,
it could
really?
Be like
just kinda
an
like
adult
bring a
and her grandma. Yeah, it could be anyone who's young at heart and wants to just have fun. And she offers a really great price, so it's two people for $10.
That is an amazing price.
I know, it's a great price. So Monica's an amazing teacher. She's also a registered clinical social worker, so she also brings...
Might get some therapy
I know,
with it, too.
She really brings out the working dynamic to make it a fun group activity. It's not just a class. It's like, oh my gosh, that was an experience.
That sounds like a great kind of team building thing. Is there an opportunity? Can you, when you go onto the class schedule, do you reserve spots in a class? Like if I wanted to go with a bunch of friends?
You could
at the same time?
Yeah, you could certainly do group lessons.
Okay.
We do a lot of bachelorette parties.
Do you?
For the belly dance classes. Yeah, they'll book a time, bring all their friends over. Sometimes they'll want to learn a dance for the, you
Can
know.
We bring drinks?
For the reception. You could, as long as you're safe, you know.
As long as it's a private party.
It's your own party, exactly.
Yeah, okay. I like this idea. Yeah. I might need a few to get belly dancing, just so you know.
Don't be shy. Just go for it.
It sounds like a great place where people, like you said, everybody, whether it be for yoga or, you know, the big and little bellies, just a place where everybody can kind of come and express themselves. That's so fun. So, and you mentioned a little bit about the boutique that you share with the Krishna Temple, some of those things. Is it all of that stuff, or are there other items in the boutique, and how did the boutique come about?
We have, right next door, a majority of it is belly dance costumes, from folkloric to cabaret, and then we also carry yoga clothes, yoga gear with mats and blocks, and a lot of jewelry, gorgeous jewelry.
I was checking them out on Facebook.
I
don't know if I'm going to come dance, but I could come shop.
Oh, yeah, great gift. Oh, gosh. Every day I'm at work, I'm like, oh, I love it all.
Could be kind of costly working there.
Yeah, I have to budget myself. We also like to bring a lot of local artists into the boutique. So we bring in Sago Silks and Then we also have, like I said, we work with the Krishna Temple for some of their fabulous Indian saris and kurtas. And then we also have Kat makes jewelry for us. Margaret makes jewelry for us.
So some of the instructors that make jewelry also.
Yeah, so we have jewelry and clothing from local crafters. And then we also have some fabulous prints from Megan Mitchell. I don't know if you know Paper Wasp, but she's great. Her stuff sells like that. So.
Oh, so if you see it and you're there, you should buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes quick.
All right.
So, yeah, you're more than welcome to bring stuff in, you know, do some consignment and... You know, for
all those aspiring artists out there and jewelry makers and clothing makers, they should come down and
check stuff out.
check it out and may possibly do some consignment. That would be great. Yep.
Hand-dyed silk veils, yoga bags that are hand-sewn with beautiful fabrics. So it's a fabulous variety.
Nice. How much square footage do you have? It sounds like it's kind of a big space for all of this.
We have two.
You're okay. You don't have to tell me exactly, but it sounds like you've got a lot of space. Do you still have space for instructors that were interested in hosting a class or having their class there?
Yeah, we do rent out space too.
Okay.
They can just contact us on Facebook or email or call, and we'll absolutely let them come and check it out and see if it works for their schedule.
And with the holidays coming up, is there anything in particular that, you know, people want to be aware of? Classes are limited, or do they get busier, faster, or are there any kind of sales?
We try to do, it's probably 4 or 5 times a year, what's called a hafla, and that's just a party. And it's an open dance where we bring all the teachers as well as invited guests from around the valley to come and perform at these. So it's a great time to come in and check out the studio, see some dancers. A lot of times there'll be hula performance. Now and then there'll be Zumba dancers. So you get to kind of check it out when the dancers are doing their thing, and then you can go check out the boutique, maybe have some snacks. So just check the website to see when those are happening. We have one for Halloween. We'll probably do one around Christmas time, but not right at Christmas. But then we do like a holiday boutique as well.
Oh, nice. So with the Hoflas, is it like an afternoon or an evening or an all-day event?
They'll usually be a Friday or Saturday evening.
Okay. And just a nice kind of pop-in.
They're free,
You don't need reservations or tickets.
No, they're free, casual, open house party.
Oh, fun. So then if the music urges me to, do I get to just get up and dance?
I absolutely can.
Nice. I think it'd be hard to just sit and watch everyone dance. I would think that it would be quite, you know... it would encompass everybody in the room and want everyone to be involved.
Nice. And then we also have gift certificates for the holidays.
Oh, wonderful. So if you want to give the gift of dance, you know, if you want...
Or fitness, you know.
Or fitness. Well, and dance is fitness. We should say that. You know, it just because it
it's
doesn't...
It's true.
Because it's fun and you can be laughing and enjoying it doesn't mean that you're not working out at the same time. So.
Yeah, we have a fabulous bakery 2 doors down. And so we're working on a sin and forgiveness gift certificate package so that for the holidays you can get that, you know, fabulous French macaroon gift box, and then I better get a yoga punch pass to go along with that.
That's great. I love that idea for sure. And I love the idea of maybe a belly, the big belly, little belly gift certificate for a friend or somebody too to come with.
They're pretty popular during the holidays because people are like, oh, they really wanted to do that, and I don't know how to get them into it.
Sure, except for a friend. You know, you have a gym buddy, you should dance buddy.
And so that way they can just bridge that, I'm unsure, and just go for it.
Nice. It sounds like a great place where you can just kind of let yourself go and enjoy one of these many forms of dance. So that's wonderful. So it's the Urban Art Studio. And again, we're at 25 East Kensington Avenue. And again, classes sound like they're like $10, some of them 2-for-1.
From $5 to $10.
Yeah. Which is so affordable and wonderful. That's awesome. So go to the website, saltcitystudio.com, and it's the Urban Arts Studio. And check them out and pick up a little gift for you and your friends during the holiday season and go out and dance.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, September.
Thanks a bunch.
For more information on the studio, visit them online at saltcitystudios.com. Thank you for once again listening to the Soundways from the Underground podcast. We appreciate it every damn time you do that. And for all things Slug Magazine, please visit us at slugmag.com. We're going to have Jeffrey Stedman back in the studio in a couple weeks to talk about all the best delis in town. We want to hear what your favorite place is to get a tasty nosh on. You can either email us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Give us a good tip, we just might play it on the air. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up again next week when we'll be talking to Lindsay Heath about her music. We'll be talking to the folks from Salt Lake DJ and Production, who teaches kids how to DJ, and we'll be talking Orphan Thanksgiving.